I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
This is KMOX Health Editor Fred Bottomer. Thanks a lot for joining us for today's podcast titled Coronavirus Facts Only. Every day around this time, I'm talking with Dr. Fred Buchholz. Dr. Buchholz is a slew care general internist at SSM Health St. Louis University Hospital about coronavirus and COVID-19. What do we need to know? How do we keep ourselves safe? And what lies ahead in the uncertain future? Dr. Buchholz, thanks a lot for joining us again.
Happy to.
Dr. Buchholz, the White House is expected to urge Americans to wear face coverings of some sort in public to slow the spread of coronavirus. And this, they say, can be a voluntary measure. What do you think of that?
Well, I'm not sure what the right word I have is. Ambivalent is probably the best, and here's why. I think it's perfectly fine. I think the most important thing here in this whole process is really social distancing or spacing people out. So I think using masks without this in place is kind of a shortcut that I'm not really sure is going to have the benefit that we want or need it to have. Clearly the spacing of everybody out is really what's been driving improvement. We've seen it in other countries. We've seen it in states that have adopted this. And hopefully, we see it in our own region where we've adopted this almost 2 weeks ago now. So I think that by far is the most important thing and has been shown to work. Masks probably have a benefit. I always think of things as risk versus benefits, and the harms of masks seem to be pretty small, although there's some things to think about. I think a couple of things that have been floated out there, the surgical masks, the ones that you'll see healthcare providers and surgeons and all kinds of people in the healthcare setting wear, are certainly better than cloth by a good margin. So anything out there that says that cloth masks are superior to, like a handkerchief or something somebody makes, is better than that is not, that's not factually based. And in that context, we're still incredibly concerned about the amount of supplies that are here for healthcare workers. So, if you have a mandate or suggestion that everybody wear, the manufactured paper masks, I'm worried about the healthcare supply or the supply for healthcare workers. I think that by far is a much more important thing than people in the community wearing masks. I think too, nobody really knows none of us are used to wearing cloth masks if that's what we're wearing. And so there's a lot of inadvertent touching of the face, and there's some downsides to that as well that nobody's really sure what the net benefit or gain of this is. But I think overall the risk is fairly small. Really what they help with, in my opinion, and I think others have said this too, is that they probably prevent you spreading it to somebody else should you be infected, rather than it protecting you. So if a lot of people are wearing this kind of a societal norm, there's probably a benefit. But the bigger benefit, again, like I said, is the spacing. And I wish that would be the focus of the national policy. If everybody's wearing face masks and everybody's still mingling and riding subways and going to places that are well-populated, I don't think the face masks provide much benefit. We've got to kind of, do this in a multi-pronged approach, and I think in terms of prioritization, the universal face masking is less. That's in a public setting. In a healthcare setting, I'm a big proponent for it. The problem is that we have such supply issues that implementing this carries a lot of logistical issues. And that's, my goodness, the amount of work the leaders above me that have had to do to kind of implement such a policy is just, it's out of this world how complicated it is. And that's that remains a massive, massive concern, because I think a big question mark with all this is how much is this spread within the healthcare setting? Just, we've got to go see patients. We've got to go provide care for some very ill people. How do we prevent ourselves from either becoming asymptomatic carriers? And when I say ourselves, I'm talking about healthcare providers, nurses, physicians, respiratory therapists, you know, anybody that has to go in and see the patient and care for them. How are we ensuring that we're not spreading it to others? And that remains a massive, massive concern. And I think, you know, I think we need to provide more focus. I'd rather the focus be on public policy to cause separation, and in public policy to really make sure the supplies are needed for our healthcare workers. It's been a consistent problem. You see it in New York. We see traces of it here in St. Louis. We see it all across the country. That's really where I wish the efforts would go.
We're talking with Dr. Fred Buchholz. Dr. Buchholz is a SLU care general internist at SSM Health St. Louis University Hospital. I guess one thing about the face coverings, I would think, Dr. Buchholz, is that when people put them on, they shouldn't get this false sense of security.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that's the biggest worry I have, is people have it on and go out and go about their normal daily business. That's killer, literally. I think this is my biggest concern. There are people out there that, you know, I went to the grocery store yesterday and saw a lot of employees wearing their face masks. I totally get it. I know they're concerned and they have to work and they're in a public area. I'm not that sensitive about that. Maybe that's again the wrong word. I absolutely understand why they're doing that. I don't have an objection to that at all. And I think it's, I wouldn't say encourage it, but I have no problem with them doing that, worried about their own safety. And frankly, preventing the spread if they were symptomatic of or asymptomatic carriers is spreading on others in a public area. So that I understand. But I think if you have the option of staying at home or sheltering in place and you're not wearing a face mask and thinking that's equivalent, that's a huge, that is not correct. And that is not what I would recommend at all.
What about wearing gloves when you go to a grocery store? That seems like a good idea. But then I read some research that said gloves probably aren't the best thing to do, because gloves can hold on to the virus more than just your plain hands. And you can always just wash your hands thoroughly when you're done at the store.
Yeah, it's a great question. And, you know, I think I should preface this with everything. You know, so much of this is unknown, and we're still sorting throughout the best things. And, you know, in medicine, and we've talked before about this, you know, before we had COVID, is, you know, the law of unintended consequences, particularly with our own health, is a very, very powerful thing that we don't talk about. So something that has a short-term gain or benefit may have a long-term consequence that we don't think about. So with gloves, I don't know as well. I was talking with this with one of my colleagues about, you know, whether we're even in the hospital. You know, we all work at computers now. We do all of our work in regards to entering orders or writing our notes on a computer. You know, how do we prevent, and people share computers, so how do you prevent contact with that? Do you wear gloves? Do you just insist on hand washing thoroughly? I'm in the hand washing camp. I've really been working hard myself on improving that more and more, and trying to be more and more self-conscious of it. I'm not sure about the gloves, because every time you have gloves, you have to take them off, and then you have to wash your hands afterwards anyway. And, you know, you have this question of, do things stick on it more? Or if you're touching things, you know, going from place to place and touching a bunch of stuff, does the benefit of that wear out? It's a great question. And short answer is, I don't know. I'm still just hand washing. And as I mentioned a couple of times, I am wrong all the time. So, you know, this is advice with a big asterisk next to it. And, you know, I'm not going to purport to be an expert in COVID prevention. I don't think anybody is. We're just still trying to sort this out. But like I said, generally hand washing is the best practice.
So if I'm understanding you properly, Dr. Buchholz, it would seem that face coverings and face masks are just a small tool in the toolbox to prevent COVID-19. The biggest tool, I guess, would be social distancing. And that would lead me to the question, what do you think of a national stay-at-home order?
I'm a big proponent of that, and I'm not shy about that. I've been saying it consistently. I mean, Missouri, the state, still does not have a statewide stay-at-home order. And, you know, I'm writing a note to the governor daily to encourage this. if you look at the early information coming out of some of the states implement this early, so California, for instance, so the chair of medicine at University of California, San Francisco, and take the politics out of this or whatever. I mean, it's you know, one of the best hospitals in the country. You know, California implemented a state shelter in place order. I don't know the exact date. It's over 2 weeks ago now. And they're starting to see kind of a plateau of cases. Now, could that be because we're not testing enough or there are other issues at play? Sure. But at University of California, San Francisco, they've had a pretty consistent number of COVID cases that they've taken care of. It's been manageable for them. It's stressful and it's taxed their system. And again, there's probably some other factors at play. It's a very well-run hospital and a good organization. So those factors are all there too. But you know, they haven't certainly seen a huge spike or seen the experience that New York has seen. Now, it remains to be seen, and maybe that changes, but, you know, it certainly is a good early indication that, of such a policy having an effect. And that's what we're looking for. I'm hopeful and I'm kind of curious, you know, this weekend we'll see kind of the 2 weeks of our shelter in place order in the city and county of St. Louis. Will that have effect? You know, it's obviously a smaller geographic region than the state of California, but, you know, does that have effect locally and how do those numbers bear out? And, you know, I'm curious to see that. I think by the end of next week, we may have a sense of where that's going. But it clearly, that's the playbook. That's the playbook other countries have followed. That's the playbook that have had effect. Even in Italy, which has really been stressed by this, they started to have a plateau 2 weeks after their shelter-in-place order went into effect. So it works. And so I think we are now the epicenter. And when I say we, I'm talking about this country, the United States. The numbers just keep on exploding. It's really getting to be a staggering amount. And, you know, I'd rather them focus on that than focus on this masking policy, which is, I think, you know, it's taking a slingshot to a machine gun battle. It's not what we need.
We're talking with Dr. Fred Buchholz. Dr. Buchholz is a SLU care general internist at SSM Health St. Louis University Hospital. Dr. Buchholz, the FDA has authorized a new emergency antibody test. What will that do?
So antibodies are basically the protein our bodies make when we've developed immunity to a disease. So let's say, for example, you had hepatitis A. And so you're exposed to that at some point. We can do your antibody test to see if you've, you know, depending on the nuance of it, of whether or not you have an active infection and you have antibodies fighting off that infection, or we can tell if you're cured of it, meaning that you've developed the right antibodies to suggest that you had the infection in the past and you mount a response, and from this point forward, you're immune. You will not get that infection again. And so the antibodies to COVID basically is answering that latter question is, you know, you may have had it in the past at some point, and most people will probably know, but you're now immune, which means you've been exposed. You now no longer have the disease and that you should not be at risk of getting it again generally. I know there's a lot of questions about people getting reinfected, but, you know, the general rule would be that you no longer have to worry about getting the disease. So that gives you some sense of if there's a determination to get it is either if you've had the disease, you're now immune and you're certainly not, you're probably not at risk of infecting others. And then B, if there's a question of whether or not you had it, say, a month ago, this antibody test would give you an answer of if it's positive and that you definitely had it. And, you know, if you were sick a month ago and weren't tested at that time, you would have an answer whether or not that was COVID or not based on this antibody test. So, you know, in a bigger picture where this helps is a couple different scenarios. One is if we're taking care of patients in the hospital and they're getting better, the antibody test might give us a sense of, you know, that clinical course is consistent with what this test does. The other one I think is more with people involved in the workforce, healthcare or otherwise. If there's an exposure and you're trying to kind of figure out, you know, say for instance, somebody was working at a grocery store, they've been there for 2 weeks and then they tested positive a week ago and you just got out that information, you're trying to figure out who might be exposed. One way you can kind of determine whether or not people were exposed a while ago is just do the antibody test. And that way, if workers are negative, then you can decide whether or not you want to keep them away from work for a while so you can see or have them come back. they test positive, you know they're immune and not risk of giving the infection out to others, and they can return to work. So it will help just kind of like with these decisions about what to do with people as they hopefully get better from this.
We're talking with Dr. Fred Buchholz. Dr. Buchholz is a SLU care general internist at SSM Health St. Louis University Hospital. Dr. Buchholz, hospitals across the country report some critical medicines are beginning to run low. Are we seeing any shortages locally?
To my knowledge, no. And I guess the bigger part is really, obviously, we haven't seen a massive spike in cases. We certainly are seeing cases. It's certainly starting to stretch our systems a little bit. But, you know, certainly we're not near the extent that, you know, like our colleagues in New York particularly are. But what these medicines are twofold. One is, you know, with these patients that they develop this respiratory failure, if they have a hard time breathing, we have to intubate them. And, you know, just imagine sticking a plastic tube about the diameter of your pinky down somebody's throat. That doesn't go easily unless you really sedate somebody. So we have a sequence of medications that we give to kind of put people to sleep for a short while to kind of numb them up or to paralyze them a little bit sometimes, to insert that tube comfortably and not cause too many problems. We can do it quickly because speed is a key component of this, of doing this, you know, within a very, very short time frame, you know, minutes, if not seconds. And so that's the first kind of set of medications that some places have really gotten in a short supply. The second is, again, if you've got a tube down your throat that's not comfortable. So say you're asleep, and as you start to wake up, a lot of people will, we call it bucking, which you just basically, you're gagging on this tube. It's insanely uncomfortable, and it's certainly not anything anybody is used to, having a tube down your throat into your lungs. And so often we'll sedate people, we'll give them medicine just to kind of cool them down a little bit and give that consistently throughout the day in order to keep them comfortable so they can allow the respiratory machine to work. And so, you know, if we have a shortage of that, that creates a whole set of problems as well. We can't keep people comfortable, or we can't oxygenate them well because they're fighting the vent so often. And again, they're not purposely fighting it. It's just the human body's response. It's a natural response to fight this because there's nothing we're used to. So to my knowledge, I can't speak for the entire region, but, you know, this is not a problem yet. I think if you haven't gotten the sense, the supply chain for healthcare is so lean, I guess is the best word. I mean, the common business practices now are to have a very tight supply chain, so you don't have a lot of products laying around because it goes bad and you lose it and it's expensive, et cetera, et cetera. And a lot of these drugs are manufactured, I'm sure, in China, which adds to another complication. And, you know, even before this, we were having supply problems, even getting things like salt water, the saline solution, the things you hang in the plastic bags that we put in a lot of different patients for different reasons. The supply of that can be unreliable sometimes just because of all these different logistical things. So, you know, I think this interesting part about COVID is how it's kind of exposed this very tenuous supply chain of equipment and material we need to do our work that we already have been dealing with for some time. This has just made it that much more magnified, I think, is, you know, once we recover from this, and we will recover from this, I think that's a part to think about. But the other part is, you know, it's thin right now, and if this gets worse, that's going to be a massive, massive problem on top of the other things we're dealing with.
Dr. Buchholz, I have a listener question for you. This listener writes, what if my blood pressure or diabetes is well under control? Am I still at high risk?
That's a great question. We alluded to yesterday is, you know, there's so much about this that we don't know. But the short answer is, at least by our anecdotal experience, just kind of seeing people, the short answer is yeah. You know, we've seen people that are relatively healthy. I mean, yeah, they have hypertension, but it's well-treated and well-controlled. And, you know, if I saw them in the clinic, I'd give them a pat on the shoulder and say, good job. And you know, they come in and they're at death's door. Now, that's probably a vast minority of patients with diabetes or hypertension, but it certainly has gotten our attention. So I think, yes, I think everybody should treat this as they are vulnerable to this and they're at risk. We don't know well who gets this and who doesn't and how nature has sorted out that pile of people. So I think that risk is there, and I certainly don't want to give any false assurances. And you know, we've had people that are otherwise fairly well controlled with these chronic conditions that are incredibly common get incredibly sick. And there's no rhyme or reason to it that we can figure out yet. I certainly hope we will. But for now, I would be just, again, everybody should be cautious. I think this is just another thing of, you know, try to avoid taking unnecessary chances.
One more question for you, Dr. Buchholz. A listener wants to know, is it safe to wear her contacts because she has to touch her eyes a lot?
I think so. And again, it all depends on the situation, the context. If you're at home generally and you know, adhering to the shelter in place mandate, I think those things would remain safe. Again, good hand washing, as always, is important. You know, wash your hands before you touch your contacts. I probably wash your hands afterwards, preferably with soap and water. You know, and if there's not a lot of contact with other people, then I think the risk is altogether fairly low. But if you're worrying about it being a barrier, you know, obviously it's not going to be a very good barrier for your eyes. You know, that would be the full, you know, real good eyewear protection. But I think if you're at home doing that, that should be, I don't see a huge issue with that.
Dr. Buchholz, thanks a lot for your time again. Really appreciate all you do for us.
Oh, no, I appreciate it. Thank you, Fred.
Dr. Fred Buchholz is a slew care general internist at SSM Health St. Louis University Hospital. So please come back again to KMOX.com and check out our next podcast titled Coronavirus Facts Only. This is KMOX Health Editor Fred Bottomer. Thanks so much for listening.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.